back to the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Well, hi there, and let's get things going on this Friday, January 3rd. Flames Talk this hour is underway. Hopefully your Friday's going along well or whenever you might be listening to us. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I can tell you this much as we get this hour underway. The goaltending conversation didn't really quiet down after Thursday, did it?
Did we think it was gonna?
Wow. Had Dan Vladar gone out there and shut the door and posted a shutout, something like that, I think it might have quelled it a little bit.
Yeah, maybe a bit. I think...
But that's not what happened.
Yeah. And, wow. I'll get to this part in a minute. You go ahead and set us up.
Dan Vladar, much to the chagrin of many, got the start Thursday against Utah. He allows the 4 goals on 25 shots when it's all said and done. And the Flames lose that game 5-3 despite holding a 3-2 lead after 40 minutes of play. First time all year Flames have lost in regulation when leading after 2 periods. And the chorus, I don't think, quieted down. In fact, I can tell you it probably got only louder based on Flames Talk postgame on Thursday about the decision to start Vladar and not stick with Wolf. I don't think Vladar was the reason why they lost that hockey game, but he also didn't go out and steal the game or anything like that either. And so the debate rages on. People, there's a very vocal and I think very large group of fans who want to see Dustin start and start a lot. A lot of people who want Wolf to be either named or based on play become the number one on this team. Like, there is a large groundswell for that right now. And I don't think that debate quieted down. Well, again, I know that debate didn't quiet down after Thursday's result. It's already confirmed, and we knew this anyway. We're not surprised by this, but they will go back to Wolf for Saturday's game against Nashville. But I don't think this conversation's going anywhere anytime soon, my friend.
Yeah, and I said yesterday on Flames Talk that I was a little bit surprised by the uproar about the Dan Vladar start, and yet I'll say today that I'm not surprised by the uproar that followed. Was Dan Vladar to blame for a 5-3 loss to Utah Hockey Club? No, I don't think he was. In fact, with a savvy play on a penalty shot, he gave his team a chance to hang around and potentially tie it late. And yet, did Dan Vladar make any saves last night that he wasn't supposed to? You know, did Dan Vladar... he wasn't to blame, but he also, you know, he wasn't the reason they won the game either. And so I think we have news today because we asked Ryan Huska about his approach moving forward to his goaltending. We asked Ryan Huska about his rotation and his assessment of it so far. And I would say that the door has not only been cracked open, but it sounds like swung open for someone to take the ball and run with it a little bit here.
So this was the exchange that Ryan Huska had Friday after practice at the Scotiabank Saddledome. By the way, we know Wolf's going to get the start against Nashville. The only other change that it looked like was maybe Andre Kuzmenko back in and Walker Dewar out of the lineup. D pairings look the same. Forward lines look the same, except for Kuzmenko on the right side of the fourth line instead of Dewar. But a rather large and just kind of extended exchange with the head coach after practice about goaltending and where this goes from here. We'll just let you listen in. I think there's about 5 questions in a row about the goaltending situation.
Your 2 goaltenders are separated in ice time by like 22 seconds at this point in the season. I'm curious, as we get towards halfway, what's your assessment of how that timeshare is working?
I think it's worked well to date. I think both guys have been good for us. They've given us chances to win. I think as we keep going, You'll probably see if there is some separation between one or the other guy that someone's going to get a little bit more regular starts, if you will. And I'm not saying you're going to run a guy for 15 games, but two of three is most certainly something that we will start to look at.
And so when you consider maybe looking more at that, is that just getting to crunch time of the season? Is that seeing some set? Like, how would you make that decision?
We still look at opponent. We still look at rest and recovery for goaltenders. But a lot of it comes down to finding ways to win games too, because it's, you know, this, the area that we're in, every point, every game, every win is so very important. And if we have one of them that gets hot, I think it's important that we can stay with them for a bit, and then hey, if the other guy happens to get hot, then we get to stay with that guy for a bit too. So but I do think it's important that we find a way to go with the guy that's really feeling it.
In your experience, that's what goalies want, right? Is the opportunity to run with it if they feel like they get hot.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally.
If we were to look at sort of recent weeks, like Dustin Wolf has been, like the numbers are better for him. Is it looking like he'll be getting more games?
We'll see. I mean, he's going to start the next one, I can tell you that much. So we'll see. Like, you keep having good outings and you'll give yourself a chance to do that.
I know a lot of people kind of look at it, hey, if a goalie won the last game, logic dictates he should start. And I guess you're saying that there's more that goes into it than just simply what you did 2 days ago?
For sure. I mean, the wins come into play too. I mean, hey, most coaches would... You always want to, hey, this guy wins, so let's go back to him again. But I don't necessarily think that's the right way to go all the time. There are stretches where, yeah, you should be doing that. And we have to make the right decision as to who we're starting here.
So that was head coach Ryan Huska Friday after practice, and a number of questions there on the goaltending and, you know, how this thing evolves and how this tandem evolves. We've seen each guy so far through 38 games. We've seen each guy get a run where they've started three in a row. We've also seen each guy get a run where they've kind of like 6 of 8 or 6 of 9 type thing in there. Both guys have got a little bit of a heavier stretch over a week or two. But for the most part, it's been an even split. As you mentioned in that first, the question that you asked the coach right there, you... 22 seconds.
It's amazing.
They've started 19 games, and when you take into account all the overtime and net pulled and goalie pulled stuff, 22 seconds separate these guys in terms of ice time. And so the question then becomes, how much longer is it a straight-up timeshare, and when is the time to maybe hand one guy the baton for a little while longer? And you know, I don't know if there is a perfect answer for that. I mean, I don't know if that is now. I don't know if that's after Saturday. I mean, you're probably going to split the guys in California next week when they're in Anaheim and Los Angeles. So I don't know when the exact right time is to start going down that road. But I think, and I've been asked this question a number of times, like, when would you start to, like, when would be the right time for somebody to be named the number one? And I don't think that's going to happen this year, but when the right time is, and these questions are always based about on Wolf, when's the right time to give Wolf an extended stretch of playing time? And I've said second half of the season, kind of maybe final third of the season, closer to the Four Nations break, somewhere in there would kind of be what I think is the way to go. And maybe it happens sooner than that, but there's definitely a understanding that this is not a static thing, and it was always going to be an evolution, right? And I think that's kind of what we're hearing right there from the head coach, is that, hey, it's been good so far, and maybe it's not changing right away, but this conversation is going to evolve.
Yeah, and I think we got a pretty strong hint of maybe the level that he's comfortable with evolving it to start with when he said, 2 out of 3 is something that we're willing to look at. And so here we are 38 games into a season and each goalie has started 19. Well, if, you know, you break down, you got 44 left. So if somebody goes 2 out of 3, that, let's just say 30. Let's say you kind of max out around 30. Well, that still keeps your number one guy as it would stand below 50, which I think is a very reasonable number. It remains a platoon. And so I don't expect at any point the Flames to come out and anoint a starting goalie. Like, it just, it's not a quarterback in football. It's not something that needs to happen. Oh, this, hey, you can adjust your depth charts now. Our new number one goalie is this guy.
Right.
I think what you'll see is maybe just, I guess just a little bit of steering away from a straight up rotation where even after a guy has a good game that doesn't end in a shutout, he might lose the net. Like, I think if Dustin Wolf, for example, gives up two tomorrow, but the Flames beat the Nashville Predators 4-2, there's a much better chance of you seeing Dustin Wolf again in the next game. Whereas if you use New Year's Eve, for example, you know, maybe that was the sort of game that you should have left your goalie in after, right? One on 24 shots, wasn't especially busy, but made the saves he needed him to. It's not strictly win and you're in, but it does reward some of those better starts. But here's where it's tricky, and here's where Ryan Huska is going to face the most criticism. Right now, this is easy because what's best for the future of the Calgary Flames and what's best for the right now of the Calgary Flames, based on Dustin Wolf's current form, the answer to those questions is the same. You were talking yesterday about the social media uproar when Dan Vladar started. Well, do you think if Dan Vladar has won 8 of 10, that uproar is going to be any different? I don't. This city is clamoring to see Dustin Wolf. And this is where this debate becomes, I guess, maybe a little bit unfair to Dan Vladar, but that's pro sports, and unfair to Ryan Huska, is that, yeah, people want to see the Flames go away from this rotation, but they don't want to see Ryan Huska go with the hot hand. They want to see Ryan Huska go with Dustin Wolf.
That, I think, is the most accurate statement of the first 15 minutes here. And that's not even a criticism. I know it's not a criticism coming from you, and it's certainly not a criticism from me when I agree. I think that there is a very large groundswell of I think Flames fans, my read is that Flames fans have been clamoring for somebody to kind of embrace as the driving force of a younger, better team down the road. And I think many have chosen Dustin Wolf as that guy for good reason. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of reason to be hopeful this guy could turn into a franchise goalie. And there's plenty of reason to hope this guy can turn into an elite NHL goalie. I mean, he's shown you signs already this year that, you know, he might be moving in that direction. I still believe managing his starts and managing his workload and picking his spots well and all of what they've done through 38 games is important so that his rookie season turns into a big development season and a stepping stone for him, and that it doesn't go off the rails or anything like that. But I do understand the clamoring to see more of Wolf. I do understand the groundswell to get him in as much as possible, even though I'm not convinced through 38 that is what's best for him. I don't think just rolling Dustin Wolf and say, you're the number one, like they did with Markstrom or like they did with Kiprusoff, is the way to go about it. I don't think that's where he is yet. I still think being really smart about it and very intentional about it is the right move. In saying all that, I think I have a pretty good feel as to, Or I think I understand where a lot of fans are coming from in wanting to see this guy more. Because I'm with you. I think there would still be the clamoring to see Wolf,
right,
if Dan Vladar was red hot and getting a bunch of starts and they were riding the hot hand.
Yeah, I mean, if the Flames win 3-1 last night and Dan Vladar starts again tomorrow, RIP to your mentions on social media, right? Like, people would be fuming. And so as I said, right now this is easy because what's best for the future and what's best for the right now happens to be the same guy. You know, one of the things that I wrote today is that people are wondering if the stats are suddenly looking so different, right? The goals against average is about half a goal apart all of a sudden. There's a pretty, I don't have the exact number of points in front of me, but the save percentage, like there's a pretty large gap all of a sudden in the numbers we're talking about. So if the win-loss record favors Dustin Wolf and the goals against favors him and the save percentage, and obviously the Flames goaltending department is using more advanced numbers than that, but just use those simple ones for now. If those all favor Dustin Wolf and those stats seem to be getting further apart, why are the minutes the exact same? That's where the frustration is coming from. And yet, buddy, you raised such a great point, because the tricky part that we don't have the answer to right now is, how do you make sure that the Flames and Flames fans don't look back and say, oh, geez, remember in 24, 25, we got chasing that playoff spot and we gave Dustin Wolf a few too many starts down the stretch and things started to go a little bit sideways and maybe he didn't get his confidence back. Listen, I have a ton of faith in Dustin Wolf and you know, the mental game and all that. I don't see him being a guy whose confidence is easily shaken, but the internal discussion at the Saddle Dome can't just be, how do we win Saturday against Nashville? It has to be long-term, what's best for Dustin Wolf? How do we continue to put him in a spot to succeed as a rookie?
You know, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but I really do think that the Flames are kind of taking the approach to the first half of the season, at least, of, hey, this is like a high-end starting pitcher. And look at how baseball has really changed their line of thinking. Like, you've got guys on hard inning counts and hard pitch counts, and they really want to make sure that the wear and tear on pitchers' arms isn't going to get to the point that, you know, you got a catastrophic injury that's going to take a guy out for a year and it needs Tommy John surgery or whatever the case may be. Like, baseball has gone very, very hard in that direction of protecting young pitchers and not just throwing them out there, like letting them grow into being the inning eaters. And I think that's what the Flames are attempting to do with Wolf, mm-hmm. a rookie 23-year-old goaltender that's as specialized a position in pro sports as a starting pitcher is. Like, this is the most specialized position in hockey. And it's a position that we're learning more and more about. It's a position we're learning more and more about, you know, the wear and tear on specifically goalies' hips. Just ask Dan Vladar. Like, I do think there's a method to the madness here that isn't necessarily being spoken about enough. Like, they're not just doing this because, like, they're equal and they're just going to get equal starts. They're being very, very mm-hmm. intentional and deliberate about how they are using Wolf so that there is no burnout, so that they're managing his energy, so that they're letting him adjust to the rigors of an NHL schedule, which I'm sorry, are different than other leagues, sometimes more challenging, sometimes less challenging, but different. I do think there's a method to this that needs to be spoken about, or at the very least, I think it needs to be taken into consideration when we're having these conversations.
Yeah, like, I'll give you the example of, so November 30th in Pittsburgh, Dan Vladar gives up six and starts the next game because Dustin Wolf had quite a nasty flu bug at the end of that trip or some sort of bug, wasn't feeling great. Dustin Wolf is going to be in a position soon enough in his career when a team can't get him back from being sick fast enough and might ask him to play at 70% because they project he's going to be that good of a goalie. And yet now is not the time to do it. Like, this season is as much as anything about building up Dustin Wolf's confidence. And I don't want that to be misunderstood or misconstrued as me saying, don't give Dustin Wolf more starts. I think he's absolutely earned more starts, but start with a few more, right? Two out of three.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you don't need to crank the tap, right?
No, because you need to maintain some practice time. You know, I had a really good conversation and you can read my latest on the goalie situation on the Post Media sites. I chatted with Dustin today and I didn't quote him in the story because, you know, I didn't necessarily feel like it was fair that it looked like a goalie was sort of judging how the coach was using his netminders, and I wasn't asking them to weigh in on that, but just asking them about sort of the pros and cons of it. And you know, one of the things that Dustin said to me is in his past several seasons, whether it was with the Wranglers or going back to the WHL, like even when he had a really bad night, he was probably playing the next game. And he said there's you can kind of look at that two ways. Like it's great to just go out there and you know, set your feet at puck drop and say, I'm a better goalie than I showed in my last game. And here I am already with an opportunity to prove it. Now, the flip side of that being you don't get that valuable practice time to make sure, okay, well, here's why I had a tough outing. Here's why I lost my post on this goal or lost the shooter or misread this, and get a chance to actually work on that. And while the folks who show up to watch the games at 7 p.m., you know, they're not paying to see what a guy does in drills and practice. It's something that the Flames have to continue to think about, right? How do we put Dustin Wolf in a position to succeed? And don't forget, this organization, and I know people haven't forgotten, when it comes to drafting and developing goalies, there's some scar tissue around the saddle dome, right? This is an organization that has, you know, drafted and developed as many Sportsnet 960 goalie analysts as it has, you know, could be starting goalies in the NHL. The last drafted and developed stalwart this organization had won a Stanley Cup in 89, and he's in the Hall of Fame now. That's, yeah. Hey, good on Mike, but that's really a long time ago. Yeah. And so I understand the clamoring from people to see more of Dustin Wolf. I love watching him too, don't get me wrong. And I really understand the caution on the other side because you can't get this one wrong.
Well, and you don't, to that point, you really don't want this to turn into some of the other goalies that we've seen come in really well and then it drop off.
Right.
Whether it's Devon Levi in Buffalo. I know there's a bad example because of the Hockey Canada stuff, but Carter Hart in Philadelphia. John Gibson in Anaheim started like a house on fire. And then
there's some extenuating circumstances here, but Spencer Knight's a good example of a guy who, you know, had the sort of
Mackenzie Blackwood.
Yeah.
Like, and for a lot of these guys, it took them years to get back to build it back up because I think confidence gets shaken and all of a sudden you get up in your head. And I don't think you want to lose Dustin either. Like, I don't think you want to risk going through that type of scenario. So I don't have a problem with them being super deliberate with the way they're handling this thing. I really don't. And again, maybe I'm too meta when I'm thinking about this stuff. Like maybe I'm thinking about it from too far a distance. But that is kind of where my brain is going with the whole thing. Like sure. I don't think this is just a situation where it's like, well, you got to play Wolf. Doesn't matter. He's played lots of games before. Put him in. Like, this guy is one of the two or three most important humans in this organization going forward. And this season isn't the only thing that matters. So it doesn't have to be just about this season. And if the team truly believes that doing it this way is best for the long term for this important a human, then I think do it the way they're handling it's the way to handle it.
Now, they have an opportunity here, and I know a lot of fans would have been relieved to hear Ryan Huska's comments that you know, were shared earlier today on social and you played earlier. You know, I know people, hey, okay, let's start somewhere. 2 out of 3 for Dustin Wolf. Perfect. You know, give me
by the way, he's going to start 2 out of 3 on this homestand. He will start 2 out of 3 games.
And so coming out of the break, I'm doing math live, and we know that's horrible, but coming out of the break,
writing it down,
it was 22 games and 43 nights leading into the next break. And so that puts them down to 18 and 36 or 37 to go. You know, if you could get Dustin Wolf 11 or 12 of those and see if he continues to be the hot hand, then great, right? That's a small uptick in workload, and I think that makes sense. I guess I just want to warn people that Dan Vladar is also eligible to be the hot hand. And if Dan Vladar winds up ripping off three or four wins in a row and Ryan Huska continues to go with them, I hope people will understand that that's the same as Dustin Wolf doing that. That you know, while you want to do what's best for the goalie of the future, and yeah, you want to see more of him, and you hope he puts up numbers that continue to be Calder vote worthy, all that stuff. You know, Dan Vladar is trying to wrestle the crease away from him too.
Yep. Let's read some texts. 960-960, starting with Kevin, who says, "Hi, Pat. Hi, Wes. I'm getting bothered by the Vladar villainy. People forget that Vladar kept the Flames in the game against Vegas. When Wolf struggled, Lots turned silent. He struggled against Dallas. Sure, Wolf has been better, but Vladar has been good, too."
And I hope, Kevin, that I hope you're not getting that villainry from us.
He's talking about the overall.
And I can imagine how that must, you know, Dan Vladar is not. It's not like Dan Vladar doesn't know that the entire city wants Dustin Wolf to start. It's not like Dan Vladar isn't aware that every armchair GM had him traded 10 times last year so Dustin Wolf could become a full-time. And I was one of the people saying they need to find a way to get Dustin to the NHL. It's a tough spot for Dan. And you're right. It does kind of turn him into a little bit of a villain that way. And that part's unfortunate.
This is from Andrew. "I definitely think some fans are acting like children. It's pretty silly. Fans think that Wolf is Kiprusoff. No goalie starts 70 games anymore." What else we got here at 960-960? This from Heath. "Fellas, I have to admit Vladar's been decent. By no means should he not be given some starts, but if Huska wants his team in the playoffs, I'm afraid it's time to think about putting your best player in the net in that position. I can't help but think that Wolf makes a couple more saves for them the other night and gives them a better chance to win that game. The Flames in front of them were a little rattled by the bad officiating, and the hockey club and Utah was flopping every time they were touched. I don't know what the last line is supposed to mean, but essentially saying that they would have had a better chance had Wolf been in the net." And then the only rebuttal I have is, until Dustin Wolf figures it out on the road, can we even be having the number one conversation? He's got a 937 on home ice and an 872 on the road. Like, and that's not even a criticism. I just think it's part of the learning process of a young goaltender. But I still think there are some things that, you know, need to be figured out from Dustin as he rolls through his first NHL season.
Yeah, it's one of the things that he said to me earlier today is, listen, when you're in a groove, you want to be playing more. And yet there's been stretches, and he said, "I've had stretches this year where I feel like I wasn't playing very well and I didn't have to wait very long for my next start."
Yeah.
And so you take the good with the bad there. I do think that goaltending is one of the reasons we're talking about a Flames team being in a playoff fight. And I do think that one of the reasons it's been a strength is that you haven't been sledgehammering the rust off anyone at any given point. And so there's a risk on the other side of that as well.
This reads, "You don't want another Devon Levi on your hands, Pat. The way the Sabres mismanaged the World Junior MVP, who's now toiling in the AHL." And I do think the Flames are actively trying not to mismanage that. This says, "Pat, do you think the organization is at risk of mismanaging Wolf the same way they mishandled Tkachuk? Back then, Tkachuk was the only player consistently showing emotion and grinding, but he was told by the leadership group that it can't be a riot every night. Instead of embracing his passion and committing to him with a long-term deal in the captaincy, they told him to refrain from his game, which ultimately led to his trade request." Now, which wasn't a trade request, but anyway, we move on. "Now, with Wolf, the message seems similarly discouraging. If you even allow one goal, you lose the net next game. He's your franchise goalie and a core piece of this team's future, yet he's being held to an almost impossible standard. Statistically, Wolf's been outstanding, consistently outperforming Vladar, even against tougher quality chances, and yet he still doesn't get rewarded with starts. How does a player like that go home after saving 30 of 31 and not wonder what more he has to do to earn consistent opportunity? If the Flames are serious about building for the future, don't they need to show confidence in their young core pieces instead of creating an environment where they feel undervalued?" I don't see it that way at all.
Yeah, I wanted to jump in on that one. I think to suggest that the Flames haven't shown a whole lot of confidence in Dustin Wolf this season would be unfair to how Dustin Wolf's been managed. I think this is an organization and a coach and et cetera that has shown a ton of faith in this young goaltender, and I do believe he feels that.
This reads, Boys Harvey here. For example, if Vladar were to start on Saturday and get a shutout, would you play Wolf the following game? People want Vladar sent down for Cooley, but Wolf can still learn a lot from Vladar, just like how Markstrom taught Vladar a lot. That comes from Harvey. This comes from Rory in the Beltline. I understand people want to see more of Wolf, but what I don't understand is the outcry when Vladar gets the net. Vladdy's played well this year, and as you've both mentioned, you can do a lot of damage to a young goalie's development by failing to manage his starts. Not only that, but it would be great to extract some additional value on top of what Vladar's contributed on the ice and in the locker room by potentially moving him at the deadline. If it isn't broke, don't fix it and keep rolling with the tandem approach. Go Flames. That comes from Rory.
And from Rory there, like, it's a good point at the end. One of the reasons that the Flames have been hesitant to go away from a rotation is that they're getting good goaltending.
It's working, right?
Yeah. And so coaches don't like to mess with things that seem to be working fairly well.
And one final text, this reads, love the pragmatism in the discussion. They need two quality options. They don't have someone who can play the tough teams like Vladar has. Love that Wolf and Vladar are in the Flames' plans and balancing opportunities accordingly, so neither one demands more or demands out because management plays games or pushes one over the other when they don't have a team that warrants a win-at-all-cost approach. FYI, no one seems to be calling out strength of opponent in the current numbers and results. That comes from Charles in Calgary. There you go. Good stuff on the text line at 960-960, and here's what I know. This debate and conversation probably isn't going anywhere in the next 44 games. I would imagine that this is still going to be a conversation in a month's time and 2 months' time and so on and so forth.
Yeah, we can probably leave that on our list of Flames talk topic ideas.
I would imagine so. It's Pat and Wes. We're underway this hour, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now time for our Friday edition of the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. And gents, Friday at practice, first of all, very cool, was one of the Flames' open practices. So, I don't know, good like 1,500 fans were there watching practice. Ryan Huska mic'd up and was kind of narrating the entire way through, which I thought was really cool. It's like, move over Wilsey and John Abbott, because Ryan Huska is a play-by-play guy. He might have some competition. He narrated it really well. It was just a cool day, and the only change that we saw when it comes to forward lines and defense was Andre Kuzmenko skating on the right side of the fourth line with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg instead of Walker Dewar. So, assuming that Kuzmenko comes back into the lineup after being healthy scratched Thursday against Utah, like, and I know the answer to this, so I'm going to ask it just because I know it'll open up the conversation, but Kuzmenko with Rooney and Lomberg, how much or how little do we like that potential fit?
I don't love it. Now, they did stick him on the right side of that line earlier in the season and quickly promoted him in that game. So, got off to a pretty good start in that game, started to create a little bit offensively. They bumped him up into the top nine, and I think he played a decent game that night, if I'm not mistaken. It feels like forever ago. But, I mean, Andre Kuzmenko, in my opinion, is not a fourth-line player. I think putting a top nine guy on a fourth line can maybe get him back to doing the work. Maybe that's the message they're trying to send him here. But in order to maximize his skill set, I think he has to play in the top nine. And, you know, maybe he starts Saturday's game on the fourth line and then gets bumped up if you know, someone isn't playing well, or if he is playing well and just earns a spot a little bit higher up in the lineup. But I don't think it's ideal to have Andre Kuzmenko playing on the right side of a line with Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg. I would probably, and Patty, you and Mick and I were talking about this in our group chat earlier today. I would probably put him on the right side of a line with Connor Zeri and Yegor Sharangovich, and that's not a knock on Jacob Pelche. I just think that Pelche is a better fit in a fourth line role than Andre Kuzmenko. The only thing I don't like about that line, at least on paper, is that you want to have somebody with some sandpaper on all of your lines, and I'm not sure who the sandpaper on that line would be with Sharangovich, Zeri, and Kuzmenko. And all three of those guys love to have the puck on their stick. So I don't love that line on paper either. But again, Kuzmenko in a fourth line role long term doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But you know, they've invested in this guy, and if they want to get something out of him, whether that's some goals and points as a member of the Flames or potentially something before the NHL's trade deadline, they've got to get him going because they couldn't move him right now without eating half his contract and also sweetening the pot. So I understand why they keep circling back to him and giving him more opportunities to find his game, but ultimately it's up to him. He's got to start to play better.
Certainly, as Wilsey said, and guys, we all know, right? Andre Kuzmenko, despite his fourth line stats this season, he's not a fourth liner. He's not a guy who is well suited to the expectations of a fourth line. You know, he's one of those guys that if he's playing well should be higher in your lineup. And yet I think this is the perfect spot for Andre Kuzmenko tomorrow night, because I personally don't really want to see the Flames reward Andre Kuzmenko with anything except a spot on the fourth line right now. I don't think that this is a guy who deserves to go into your lineup at a different spot right now than in a limited role. And you're sending a message to him, show us that you should play more. Show us, hey, you know how we keep begging you to shoot the puck more and yet you haven't registered a shot on net in the last five games? Show us that you've taken notice of what we're asking. Show us that you understand what we need of you on the fourth line, and then we'll consider rewarding you. I think I certainly understand why the Flames, and at least the Flames coaching staff, are at the end of their rope with this player. It's like, and I understand there's a language barrier there, but it's not getting through. What they're asking of him, what they're demanding more of, they're not seeing it from Andre Kuzmenko. And when that's the case, I personally, if it was my decision, would not be rewarding him and punishing Jacob Pelche by saying, well, Andre, you are a talented guy, so we're going to put you in here. No, you got to show me that you deserve it.
It's one of those really strange conversations, and there's kind of like the whole chicken and egg side of it, right? Like, where you want Andre Kuzmenko to come back in and on merit, yeah, he probably fourth line is where it belongs right now. But on the other hand, you're like, you're trying to see if you can get more out of him. So you want to put him in a place where he is in a little bit of a better spot to succeed, which wouldn't be on a fourth line where there's not a lot of offense being driven from there. It's really a catch-22, and it just goes back to how frustrating it has been this year with this player, Wilsey. Like, this has been a year that I think the coaching staff has really hit a wall in terms of trying to figure out how to get a guy that was so dynamic for them offensively a year ago to be even close to that when he's in the lineup now. And I don't think that in his recent times in the lineup, when he's come back in, he's made much of an impact. I thought that despite Sunday in Vegas starting on a fourth line and then getting elevated in the second period to the Zeri line, I don't think Kuzmenko really did much of anything at all to keep his spot in the lineup, which is why they went back to Walker Duehr. So no, I do not think Kuzmenko is a great fit on the fourth line, but I also don't know if he's a great fit in this lineup period right now. That's kind of where it comes down to, because I think Pelche has earned himself a spot on Zeri's right wing, and maybe Walker Duehr hasn't been playing very well. I wonder if you don't explore recalling somebody else and maybe seeing who's a better fit on the fourth line than Duer has been. I know that would mean exposing Duer to waivers, but I think you're comfortable in doing that. Like, maybe you try a guy like Dryden Hunt. We know Lomberg can play the right side and Hunt can play the right side. Or maybe it's somebody else that we're not talking about right now to see if a fourth line role works. But I guess what it comes down to is, Willsie, there's not, at this stage, with the way Kuzmenko's played, with the way the Kadri line has gelled together, with the way the Backlund line has really excelled since putting Coronado on it, I don't know where the natural spot for Kuzmenko is.
Yeah, there isn't one right now, because he has struggled and struggled mightily this season. And Wes, you bring up the language barrier. I do think there's something to that, but to play devil's advocate, not understanding the English language as well as probably any of his teammates, it didn't stop him from scoring 30-plus and 20-plus in his first two NHL seasons, respectively. So, yeah, I do think that that is a thing. I just don't think that's a valid excuse for Andre Kuzmenko. And, you know, there was a moment in practice earlier this week where, you know, he was just kind of leaning up against the boards by himself while a bunch of his teammates were working on some individual skills at the end of a practice. And Ryan Huska had to go over to him and say, hey, why don't you go join your teammates and do some work here? So ultimately, I think this comes down to the player. And yeah, one of the coach's jobs is to put all of his players in a position to succeed. Ryan Huska's tried to do that in a bunch of different ways with Andre Kuzmenko. It hasn't worked. For me, it comes back to Andre Kuzmenko having to listen to what the coaches are telling him. And I know for a fact, because we've asked him about 100 times, that they are telling him to shoot the puck and to stop waiting for the perfect shot or the perfect play. Sometimes you have to simplify your game to get back to where you want to be. And he just has not been able to wrap his head around that, or has not been able to do that. So if Andres Kuzmenko is going to get an opportunity to play on Saturday night, regardless of what line he is on, he has to not only listen, but apply what the coaches have told him to do. His shot is his best weapon. He hasn't used it. He hasn't had more than two shots and a goal in a single game this season, which is just mind-boggling for me. So if he can start to use his shot, and I think that'll lead to him starting to score some goals, maybe we start to see the player, the imperfect player, who we saw in his first couple of years in the league, but still an impactful player because he put the puck in his opponent's net. So we'll see what they decide to do. The fact that the fourth line, outside of in that game against the Canucks when I thought they were effective, has struggled, I think it opens the door for Kuzmenko to get back in, because you're probably not getting what you want from that group on a regular basis right now.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday edition of Flames Talk. He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Gents, after another goal on Thursday against Utah, Connor Zary now has 5 goals, 10 points in his last 12 games. Is this just as simple as Zary finally starting to get rewarded a little bit more on the score sheet for his strong play generally all season?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we talked, I felt like for weeks, about him being snake bitten offensively because he was creating a ton. He just wasn't getting the goals or getting the points on a consistent basis. So it's so good to see that this young player, through thick and thin, through good times and bad times, and for a while there, he was playing well and just wasn't getting the goals and the points, that he stuck with the process, because sometimes that's hard for any player to do, but I think that can be especially hard for a young player to do. So, you know, Connor Zary for me has been as dynamic offensively as any player on this team from the start of the season. And he is clearly driving that line right now and getting some help from Jacob Peltier, not a ton of help from Yegor Sharangovich, at least not offensively, but he's been a ton of fun to watch both at 5-on-5 and on the power play. The transition from the wing to center, other than in the faceoff circle, has gone really smoothly for him. You know, quite often, and I was talking about this on the morning show today, quite often he is the deepest guy in the defensive zone as far as the forwards are concerned. And then he is so good at exiting his zone, getting through the neutral zone, and then entering the offensive zone. Quite often he's the first guy at the other end of the ice as well, kind of leading the charge for the Flames offensively. as he goes from playing defense to playing offense. So I think Connor Zeri's had a really strong season. So, yeah, it's great to see him finally getting rewarded for all of his hard work.
It definitely is encouraging. And I think we all knew the dam was going to break, as you said, Wilsey. This is a guy who's consistently generated chances. I think the really encouraging thing is that the offensive boost of late has come from the center position. And while he has had some help from Jacob Pelche and at times from Yegor Sharangovich, I don't think you're looking at it and saying, you know, he's riding the coattails of his wingers. And in fact, I know you're not looking at it and saying that. And so one of the big questions was whether Connor Zeri could be productive as a center, whether his willingness to attack, whether his willingness to carry the puck through the neutral zone, all those things, whether that would work at the pivot position. And I think the jury was out for a while. You know, we didn't see it or maybe didn't see it enough at first. And yet there's a lot of really good signs there. I think, you know, if you're the Flames looking and I'm not sure, maybe Connor Zeri ends up back on the wing long term, but right now with the shortage of centers, I think you can look at Connor Zeri and say, yeah, that's a guy who can work the middle for us for a lot of years. And the fact he's being rewarded offensively and doing it at that position, I think it's significant.
Yeah, I think, and that's the thing that I was going to point out for myself is that, yes, I do think we're talking about a guy who is getting rewarded for his good work. And it's all, a lot of the even strength work has all been at center here during this 12-game stretch. I don't know for sure exactly when he got moved to the middle, but I think all 12 of the games he's been playing down the middle that we're talking about here. And so that's really encouraging, too. 10 points in 12 games for a sophomore NHLer, that's a nice little run to go on. But the fact that he's playing center ice for the first time in his NHL career and also still generating offense, that's really encouraging, too. Now, a good chunk or some of this has been on the power play, and Ryan Huska acknowledged that at practice on Friday, that, you know, some of this production has been done on the power play, and the unit that Zeri's been on has been a pretty good one, and both units have been decently productive for him. But I guess it just is a really encouraging sign, guys, that they moved Zeri to the middle for the first time ever at this level, and while there's still some adjusting going on, as in he's still learning the faceoff side of things and he's still learning the defensive side of things, the fact that the offense is coming while he's playing center ice, that to me is a really nice sign. So, yeah, I do think this is a guy who's played some pretty good hockey all year long. And maybe, Wilsey, I don't know how many times at the end of games on post games you'd make the point that feels like Connor Zeri's been snake bitten. While it feels like maybe he's that. The snake bite's wearing off. They found the anti-venom. So it feels like maybe he's starting to, the points are starting to follow a little bit with his good play, which is nice to see.
What did you say it was? 5 goals and 10 points in 12 games?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are really good numbers, but I would argue he would probably have even better numbers if he was getting more from his wingers. Right. I mean, Jacob Pelche has been fine in that, third line right wing spot, and he hasn't played there consistently, so, you know, there's been a bit of a revolving door there, so we'll see how that looks moving forward. But, you know, if Yegor Sharangovich could find his game, then I think that could be a really good duo for the Flames with him and Connor Zeri and whoever on the right side. But what's interesting is I can't remember if it was me that asked or who it was that asked Ryan Huska about Yegor Sharangovich and his struggles offensively, and you know, his response was interesting. He almost took responsibility for it in a sense, saying we've got to find a way for him to have the puck on his stick more. And it's like, okay, well, how do you do that? And his response was move him to center, right? Because you've got two players on that line in Zeri and Sharangovich who have both kind of rotated back and forth between the wing and the center, who both like to have the puck on their stick, who are both good at zone entries. So maybe that wouldn't be a great deal for the Flames moving forward because they're similar in that sense. But, you know, Connor Zeri is definitely driving that line. If Yegor Sharangovich can find his goal-scoring touch, I think Zeri's point totals are going to continue to climb. And it would be great if Sharangovich started to score some more because we know he can do it. But, yeah, if they could get that line going, it means the Flames would have 3 scoring lines and be a lot tougher team to defend. So Zary's doing his job. We'll see if the other guys can pick it up.
And we will see you at Morning Skate on Saturday. Thank you, Willsy. Good stuff as always.
Okay, guys. Have a great weekend, everybody.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour. Thanks to Shan Vergie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producer. And that was the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.